listening to the Warden Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gromadsky, and today I'm going to be talking to Mark Radasky, who is currently managing partner at Clarity Capital. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
And I know you mentioned that you also started a new venture recently, and before that, Clarity Capital, you were at Columbia Packaging Group. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your career trajectory and what you've been doing?
Yeah, certainly. So Columbia Packaging Group was a family business. It was my family's business that I took over as third generation owner and president and CEO of the company. And I took the company that was a small regional distributor of packaging supplies, and we grew that business through M&A and used it as a platform and acted as a private sponsor to grow that business through acquisitions in the polyethylene film sheet and bag business. So we made five or six acquisitions over a period of time and integrated those businesses together into one platform. Operated those businesses and exited in 2021 and used that business as a way to I guess prove myself in the market in M&A because I was in government for a long time, so I took a non-traditional or circuitous route to private equity and venture, and then started Clarity Capital in 2022. And we've made investments acting as a private sponsor, continuing to act as a private sponsor in kind of right down the fairway businesses, manufacturing, chemical and minerals, packaging, coatings and sealants. And then in this year, in 2023, started 10X Partners, which is on the venture side. And we invest into companies that are actually supported by PCIV, which is the Penn Center for Innovation Ventures and Pennovation Works and the University of Pennsylvania. So it's a nice partnership and relationship. We all have experience at UPenn and Wharton and all speak the same language. And these are really great companies that are founded by professors at Wharton. And we provide them support and way to commercialize their business.
That's super unique. So you started in the CPG. Sorry, I have some echo there. So you started in a third generation family business.
Right.
Gained a ton of experience that way. Probably had incredible mentors because it was family wise. Then grew that business through M&A. How'd you end up building that M&A experience? Because I think you finished the Wharton program in June of 2023. Where did your M&A experience come from? And what was that like? Because to, you know, have success at that is very difficult in the integrations and then to take that.
Right. That's a really good question because I had an opportunity that I couldn't refuse in terms of going into a family business that was run at the time by my father. And, you know, when you go into a family business, you don't really have informed consent, so to speak. And the owners of the business, you know, are able to create a great lifestyle for themselves. And it's their company and they can do with it what they want and run it how they want. In this situation, there were a lot of non-active family members. And my father at the time had made the decision that he didn't want to necessarily do things within the business that either got the business out over its skis or would be too risky for the appetites of non-active family members. So when I came into the business, you know, the first thing I did was to avoid nepotism, especially, was to sit back and observe and understand what the business was, what the business's capacity was, where it could go, what it needed in the immediate future, in the immediate now, what it could do in the future. And that allowed me to understand what levers were best to pull. And over the first few years of being in the company, I really saw what the company was good at, where it could compete and where it couldn't compete. And it had a manufacturing element to it on an agricultural side, on an agricultural packaging side, but it didn't really have manufacturing in traditional packaging, like boxes or polyethylene or plastics. However, it really did a great job of distributing polyethylene products regionally. So knowing that the company really understood the polyethylene film sheet and bag space, and as a way to grow through manufacturing and controlling your supply chain and having more touches to customers and having a experience in manufacturing, made a decision that the way to grow was through acquiring extruders, printers, and converters of plastic film. So from there, I really took my time in one, building out and professionalizing our team operationally, from COO, vice president of corporate services, vice president of sales, CFO, so that we had a foundation and an executive management team that understood what my goals were for the business and the vision that I had for the business, because it certainly wasn't going to happen overnight. And then on the other side of it, I really worked on developing my corporate, what I'll call corporate service provider relationships with insurance companies, with banks, with attorneys, with accountants, with investment bankers, with brokers, to understand, okay, what is the landscape of market, what is potentially out there to invest in, to make acquisitions. And then the first thing I did was I acquired the business from my father. And then probably the hardest deal that I had to do was buying out those non-active family members, because you have to, you know, see them at Thanksgiving after that. And once the business was consolidated in terms of ownership and the cap table, we could move forward with targeting businesses that fit our cultural profile and the size of the acquisitions that we wanted to make and were a geographical fit. And so then we made acquisitions in Texas, in Ohio, and in California. And from there, we integrated those businesses together so that it was one company, was symbiotic. Everything was on the same systems, ERP systems, HR systems, benefit plans, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was cooking. And then we had an opportunity to exit at the end of 2021. And I did that. And I knew that I was going to have to do these things on my own as a private sponsor, because I didn't take the traditional route of going to business school. I went to law school. I had my master's in a foreign policy background, but I didn't have the business school education and then go into an investment bank or with an analyst at a private equity firm. So I had to demonstrate to folks in the marketplace that I knew what I was doing and I could be successful in executing on it. So what resulted was kind of a unique mix of both having operational experience from running a company and then also having the M&A and financial experience of executing on acquisitions. So that has served to prove me well because, you know, as we go down the path in terms of private investment into companies, whether they're existing businesses that are looking for an exit on, say, the private equity side or an early stage business on the venture side, you know, you can really be a resource and partner for both of them in terms of how to grow value in the business on the venture side, commercialize a business, professionalize a company, be a resource for where key operational inputs need to go into. And then on the more mature businesses that want to, you know, that you're going to hold a company as an investment for a period of time. You know, again, you're professionalizing a business in a certain way. You're able to build out a management team. You're able to find folks. You've got relationships with folks that are in those industries that have experience building out in those spaces. You have, if it's in manufacturing, you can bring your manufacturing experience, your processes, the place. Also with the operational experience that I had, it's really important. I think the most important thing is a culture fit. And I say that because I think in any deal, and I don't want to sound flippant here, but the money is the easy part, I think, in a deal. It's the first piece that's going to be resolved because it's math, and the math works or the math doesn't work. And both parties can come to an agreement of what makes the most sense. And if it doesn't, it's easy, you walk away. But if it's going to be a mutually beneficial deal, you know, the math is going to make sense. And the more important component is that culture fit of do I identify with what this business stands for, what its culture is? Because you can't change culture overnight, and especially in a mature business, they have a certain way of doing things. And so if they don't have people or processes that are open to different perspectives or open to working in a different manner than they're used to, that culture piece is going to be a challenge.
What you're saying sounds like you did a lot of the right things from, you know, identifying what the company was good at and what it was not good at, focusing on geographic locations and targets. You built that expertise of M&A in what you did with Columbia Packaging Group, and then it sounds like took it over to Clarity, where essentially you were to some degree doing private equity, now wanting to do venture capital space. And then you recognize that culture is very hard and you have to get the numbers to work, and you identify synergies and opportunities. How did you know to do that stuff, you know, without an MBA program or without some of that biz acumen? Because it sounds like you were doing all the right things and then executing on it. But that doesn't mean that everyone knows to look for that.
Right. Well, you know, I think the first thing you have to do is you have to listen. Okay. You have to hear what people are saying when you're going into negotiations. And you have to understand if you're lucky enough to be, you know, in a room with someone, you know, not on Zoom, not on a phone call, not through email, and you're in this room with them, you can really can find a way to connect with a person and understand what their interests are and what their goals are. Because someone who's, if we're taking, coming from private equity and we're looking at the middle market space, and you have someone who wants to exit their business, they built up their business, it's their baby. A lot of their identity is in the company, and it's who they are. And at the same time, you know, they're coming off the golf course with their friends, and they hear that a buddy of theirs just sold their business for $100 million. And so, oh, well, I'm going to sell my business for $100 million. Well, you're not going to be successful if you just go in there and tell them your business isn't worth that. If you're able to connect with them and build trust between them and show them that, look, this is a mutually beneficial process, and then educate them on where the market is and what expectations are, you're going to be successful, I think. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do, but I think it's about understanding people and not rushing to judgment and looking at numbers. And so having an operational experience while I was doing this allowed me to identify what these pain points are for owners in their businesses currently and pretty early on in deals. And then being able to work with them going forward, you know, because in a lot of cases, they'll hold on to a piece of ownership for a second bite of the apple. And you know, having a shared experience of troubleshooting and problem solving together, you know, we were able to solve those problems and build out culture and build out operational processes faster.
And I'm assuming that the way that you make the numbers work is because you're paying them something based on market, based on what the business is actively doing. And if they're more mature businesses, like, you know, let's say your father's, where they don't want to take on risks, they want to do things normal, you then see the opportunity, hey, that's fine, you can do this, but sell to us, and we're going to take on some of these newer initiatives, take on some more risks, and grow the business this way. And that's how the numbers end up working for both of you.
Exactly. So a business owner, you know, their company may be at $5 million of EBITDA, and they may have a $3 million line of credit, and they're not, and they have a banking relationship with a regional bank or a local bank that doesn't necessarily have the bandwidth to offer them certain financial instruments or risk, so to speak. And with other relationships that we may bring to the table for the business, we can take those risks. Now, I don't like that word, but because they're certainly calculated and well thought out and planned, that you have a high probability of success with doing that, so that you're not shooting before you aim. But make the business make its growth trajectory faster, and help them then identify if there's other low hanging fruit in the marketplace that they could bring in a bolt on acquisition to grow the business as well.
And so, as much as I was in my head thinking about what you did with Columbia Packaging Group and some of the M&A, it sounds probably like this is exactly what you're still then continuing to do with Clarity Capital. Is that right?
Yeah, so we invest into middle market businesses that, again, like I said earlier, are really middle of the road. They might not seem exciting to somebody from the outside looking in, but they're strong companies. We don't invest into distressed businesses. We don't invest into companies that are financially backwards or operationally deficient. We invest into companies that have strong management teams in place, you know, that there are folks that are going to stay on board. You know, we incentivize those people with management option pools. We augment those management teams and fill in gaps with people who we feel that are going to be key to the business going forward. And then where the venture side is really exciting, because those are the companies that we try to identify that are really doing things that can be, you know, world changing, frankly. There's a business on the venture side that we're investing in right now that can fundamentally change the mortality rate of women who hemorrhage during labor and drastically drop those numbers with the technology that they have to identify a hemorrhage before it can happen, up to 2 hours before it can happen. And it's like you're fundamentally saving lives here. And those are businesses that are on the venture side that are really exciting in healthcare IT and biotechnology, that we feel that, okay, they have this technology that is coming from the brightest minds at UPenn, and we can help support them operationally. We can help commercialize their business. We can help identify where gaps are, be a resource for them so that they're not, you know, standing on an island. And with the resources that we have at 10X, coupled with PCIV, coupled with Penovation Works, which is a 60,000 plus square foot facility on 23 acres, right? And right next to the Penn's campus. It's unbelievable what these businesses have the potential to do. And, you know, we invest in the pre-seed rounds, and we want to get these businesses to Series A, and so that they can, you know, realize true value.
Essentially what you've realized, packaging business, when it came to what the company needs operationally to execute and grow, you then did a clear capital. Now in the venture space, you're realizing, hey, all these pieces that are valuable exist through Penn and the resources that you have. And as much as this might not be your domain expertise, you've had experience where management teams essentially, you know, drive the bus. And this is why they have to be faculty from Penn. You know, they're experienced, you know, they have the expertise. And you're now filling in some of the gaps or helping them because you know how to execute and scale and know that they need capital. But you also know that management is core to that. So giving them that capital, access to capital, in your opinion, should be that final hole for that venture fund to then be successful. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we on the venture side, we provide frictionless capital. So we don't do convertible notes. The companies, in our opinion, should not have, you know, like a sword hanging over their head with a convertible note. It puts debt on the business and an additional layer of stress that a CEO doesn't need, in our opinion. Now, there's more than, you know, one way to do things, but that's our way. So for us, when we can offer that frictionless capital that can accelerate that business to hit the milestones that business expects to hit and needs to hit, they can do it quicker. They can do it more accurately, and they have a higher probability of success.
And where are you seeing a lot of your deal flow? You mentioned early on, you know, a lot of essentially corporate development work or business development to some degree, and that's not the words you used. And I know Wharton has an alum or an angel program. Is it a lot of it organically? Are you using some platforms for that? Is it just being in industry for a long time, getting lots of deals? So, how do you go through all the companies that are looking for funding?
On the venture side?
Yeah.
On the venture side, we have a relationship with PCIV that we invest directly into PCIV supported businesses. So that is a unique piece for us. On the private equity side, yeah, we have platforms that we use. We have, you know, our proprietary lists. We have relationships with investment bankers who understand the size and space of the companies that we're looking at. So when, you know, a lot of it is, you know, picking up the phone and staying connected and, you know, being on someone's mind, because if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. And so, you know, the business development is difficult because you're gonna see deal after deal after deal, and you have to identify what the right one is that fits your investment parameters. And you know, does it fit your, you know, your, can you understand the business? You know, if it's a company that I, you know, on the private equity side, if we're going to, you know, be in that business, we fundamentally understand how it does business. Do we know this marketplace? Because there's a lot of people that invest in a lot of different spaces, and you have to find what you're good at.
And what would you say you're good at? A lot of things.
So on that, it's manufacturing, light manufacturing, chemical and minerals, packaging, distribution, coatings, and sealants. It would be hard to go into like a mature tech business because there are so many folks who've been in that space for a lot longer and know that better. And you know, you're going to do a disservice to yourself by going into a business space that you don't fully understand, and you're going to do a disservice to the business when there's somebody out there who can run that business better. Because at the end of the day, all of these companies, you know, whether they have 10 employees or 1,000 employees, you know, they're relying on that, on the business doing well to support themselves. So you have to be, you know, when you're running a business or owning a business, you have to be thoughtful to that, like that other people are counting on you and their families are counting on you for the decisions that you're going to make.
And when I think about, you know, you said strong management team, strong businesses, looking mm-hmm. for that growth, how do you become effective or chosen, I'll say, as a capital provider? Because it seems like, you know, more companies should be looking at that space. And maybe it's not specific because, you know, it's somewhat a niche category. But for example, I have a friend that works in that manufacturing space, so to speak. And I'd be curious, you know, maybe she talks to her boss and I suggest that they come in and chat with you about whether they need capital or not. I have no idea. But, you know, what makes somebody like your company interesting to strong companies with balance sheets, and why do they accept your capital versus capital from others?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the experience of having run business, you know, having 250 employees that I work with, and being able to sit down with that business owner and those management teams and really understand what their challenges are. And to be able to, you know, convey, you know, I had an experience that was similar to that, and here's what I did, and here's what I thought about, and here was the outcome and the results. And people get so caught up in the money and in the deal that they lose sight that the fact that there's still a business that has to run and has to grow, because I'm still going to be accountable to my investors. Okay. And, you know, and then the business is going to be accountable to the board of directors and to the investment group that goes into it. So when you get so caught up into that piece and you forget about the company and the people that are there, that's why I said that culture is so important, being to connect with understanding what does the business really do? What does it have the capacity to go forward? And if you're able to, in that 3 months of due diligence that you may have on a deal, understand the business more and more and more and explain what the vision going forward is, you know, that you're going to be successful in closing that deal.
And you mentioned on the venture side, you look at pre-seed deals, and then on capital, how big are the check sizes there, and what are usually valuations like in those ranges that you guys come in at? Is it like a $5 or $10 million check, or are you talking
smaller? Well, yeah, it depends. That's always moving, because it depends on what the industry is and the size of the business. So we'll look in the middle market space anywhere between $3 million to $10 million EBITDA business. And, you know, multiples now have been shrinking because of interest, a lot because of interest rates and certain uncertainties in the economy. But for a long time, these multiples were really high. And you were seeing, you know, folks overpaying for companies because there was a lot of dry powder out there and capital had to be deployed. And it was a great opportunity for sellers. And I think that, you know, sellers' eyes got really big and they should because there were groups out there that were willing to pay the premium plus for these companies. Now they're coming down a bit, but I don't, you know, when I look at a multiple of what are we going to pay for a business, we say a $5 million EBITDA business is going for, you know, let's just be easy, five times, so $25 million. It then becomes, you know, internally, how much debt are you going to put on the business? And that goes into one, what is your financial institution willing to do there, and what is the operation of the business, how it cash flows, can it support the debt? Now, because interest rates are so high right now, you're seeing a lot of equity going into these deals and not a lot of debt being put on a business. So, I mean, right now, I would think you want to keep under two times EBITDA of debt on a business, certainly, if not less than that. But, you know, probably in a typical market, the debt capacity would be three times, but that's really pushing the limit there for me, what I'm comfortable doing.
Yeah. So just in that example, so equity checks could be in the $10 to $15 million range, so to speak. And right. It's mostly for still buying out businesses, replacing the existing, let's say, CEO, and then looking to put in a new management team, or, you know, incentivizing the existing management team and maybe promoting from within to do that, or making right. You know, run more professionally. So that's the majority of that capital, because it's not just usually older people looking to take on capital and then try and do something risky with it to grow that business even more. Like, that's not really what you guys see to do the majority of your deals, right?
Right. And then say if you have a deal and the existing owner wants to roll over equity into the business so that they can have the second bite of the apple. So they may roll over 20%. And I like that, because a CEO doing that or an owner doing that means that they believe in their business and they believe in the business going forward. And there's so much institutional knowledge that they have that you really need. I mean, whether it's they know how to make a machine run, to certain relationships that they have that you're not going to be able to build overnight with a customer or a supplier or a relationship with someone who's an R&D who has a unique way of working, that if you don't really understand what they're doing and how their process is, it could be a challenge for you, but they could be invaluable to the business. And that owner knows how to get those things done.
So you really recognize that the business is not just transactional, but it is relational, and there's a lot of value that CEO or owner has built over the years and know-how that they have.
Yes. I mean, they're in that position and they're successful and have the opportunity to exit for a reason. They know what they're doing. They're not just blocking and tackling. They are strategic, and you have to fill that gap when you're buying the company and acquiring it, and you have to be able to continue on having that kind of strategic thinker in the business. And you know, you go into a company and you acquire it, and they say they have a CFO, but that person may really just be a controller, but they call them a CFO. And how do you augment them and redefine that person's role into a controller role and bring on a strategic CFO, and without upsetting the apple cart, bringing in a COO and bringing in a new CEO? Those are all really strategic, important roles in the business, and they have the opportunity to bring that strategic thought down into the middle management space of the business, and bringing on business development people who really understand how to bring new products to market, how to expand territories, how to create really feasible compensation plans for outside salespeople. You know, you find in a lot of these businesses that they say they have outside sales, but a lot of these folks are really herbivores, just going to the same customer over and over and over again. And they're not carnivores really out there wanting to hunt for new business and get excited about that. That's a lot to go into it, but I think that if you're going to be strategic and critical about thinking about a business, you have to think about all of those things at once. You know, you can't just be so stuck in a financial silo or an operational silo or a sales silo. You have to understand how they integrate together.
And it sounds like you've done a lot of deals and had to bring in a lot of important people like CEOs and CFOs. Where do you find them? Do you use recruiters?
So yeah, I have a network of recruiters that I've built out relationships with. For those key executive management positions, I think that is so critical in early on in acquiring a business, of getting that right person there, that you can't make that mistake. So working with sophisticated recruiters who understand the industry, and there's a lot of industry specific recruiters, and so having those relationships is really important. Is this a person that is willing to get their hands dirty? Are they servant leaders? How do they treat them? How do they view the relationship with the people that they work with? You know, how big of a business have they run before? Are they comfortable in an entrepreneurial setting versus a corporate setting? So those are all things that you have to think about when you're onboarding someone into those roles. They've experienced with private equity, you know.
Well, I appreciate everything you've shared. It's been really insightful and helpful. Is there anything that you wanted to dive into or chat about that maybe we didn't talk about? Because you've definitely shared a lot of insight about what you've done and how you've been
successful. Yeah, I don't know. I was just trying to, you know, with my experience, you know, it's unique, but it's gotten me here. And you know, the one thing I will say is that having gone through Wharton, that program been invaluable to me because it certainly has changed how I look at opportunities and business and challenges. Because as much as you learn from the professors, you learn from your colleagues in the courses, and you have so many opportunities to discuss with folks outside of the classroom that it's really been a fabulous program.
I would agree with you. Half of it, my learning was probably from the professors, and the other half was interacting with people and just seeing how they're different and how they think and what they think about. So I really appreciate those thoughts as well.
That, I mean, if there's any other questions, I can go on and on.
Well, no, I think you've been really wonderful, and I want to respect your time. So thank you for sharing your thoughts today.
You bet.